Hello, hello. Welcome back to Camp Half Pod. We are your head counselors. I'm Erin, daughter of Athena.
And I'm Manasa, daughter of Persephone. This week we're discussing chapters 25 through 30 of The Tyrant's Tomb. So this was a tough one to read as being low-key an Apollo fan.
Only low-key.
Only
your
low-key,
prediction,
yeah.
One of your predictions last episode was right. You were like, I think it's not a Greek god. And you were right. Like, half
I was
right.
Very excited. Half right. Yeah. I mean, I knew it had to be something close by. I just I didn't think it was going to be like this hybrid god that we would be dealing with.
Yeah.
That was creative.
And cool, because like those were actually a thing, which is like, I didn't know, but it makes sense.
I love how quickly like Greeks and Romans just adopt other religions where they're like, oh, this guy has a statue. We should just like incorporate him in our lives. It's like, honestly, it's because they didn't have like BTS and like fan culture. They just like adopted gods and religion instead.
It's basically like fan fiction, right? They're like making their own version of it.
Exactly.
I like that. It's like AO3, but in real life.
Well, when you don't have internet connection and more than half of your population can't read, you know.
Yeah, that's a problem.
You gotta be creative.
Yeah. Wow. It's fan behavior, though.
All right. To summarize what we're going to be talking about this episode, we're going to meet the god of silence, and we're going to find out that Apollo actually really high-key sucks. He was just kind of low-key sucking, and now he's real problematic.
Yeah. Yeah. We're really... This whole book feels like a lot of... I mean, all of them have been, but this one, I feel like in particular, we've gotten a lot of reasons why Apollo sucked as a god.
Yeah. And they, I mean, these are pretty bad. I feel like it's like obviously toned down a little bit too. So it's like probably worse. I can't wait when this series is over. I'm just going to like rabbit hole through all of the myths that have been presented. Because I don't want to do that right now because I don't want to like give anything away to spoil anything for myself through knowing and having knowledge of the myths, but I'm really curious to like really deep dive into Apollo and all of his heinous crimes after.
Yeah. Ooh, maybe we can have a bonus episode can be us putting Apollo on trial.
Our trials of Apollo. He's going this spoiler alert, he will be sentenced to death.
Yeah. Because it's fun to find like the weirdest myth. Like I loved like Gale from Heroes of Olympus. That was my favorite myth
random.
That I've learned about. Like, it was so weird. So I'm sure there are plenty of those in this that are just, like, the really weird facts that Rick just did not include.
Yeah. So had to find some sources and go on a deep dive. No, I really like that. End of this series, we put Apollo on trial.
Yeah. The actual trials of Apollo.
Yes.
We actually call Apollo himself the god onto our podcast.
He tries to, you know, explain himself. He brings some character witnesses. Artemis is there.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be hard to argue with Artemis, but maybe she'd go down against him, you know?
I don't know. I'd put her on trial, too, for actually upholding the patriarch a little bit too much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All of them are a little bit too complacent with their power.
Yes. Yeah, and Artemis being like, I only accept women under the girls when they became
only
women.
Only maidens?
Like, yeah.
Even, like, even if they're young, if they are not maidens, she's like, slut shaming. She's a little bit of a slut shamer.
Yeah, and there's like a lot of stories where like her maidens get raped by various relatives of hers. And she's like, the maiden's at fault. How dare you?
She's like, you're kicked out of my club.
Yeah. Voted off the island.
Yeah. Anyways. Well, right now we're focusing on voting Apollo off the island with his actions, his memories in these chapters. So I've got chapters 25 through 27. Chapter 25, Frozen in terror, like a god in the headlights. Why you speeding up? I don't know why he has to. It was also like a U.
Like yeah, I know. Well, he is like probably like spouts like did why are you speeding up? And then his editor was like, that's too many syllables. And he's like, I fucking hate haikus.
I wonder if Rick has like vowed to never write one again after this.
I know. He like started as like a fun thing the first book, and by the time he got to the fourth and fifth books, he was like slamming. He got better though. I feel like as these have gone on, they've gotten better because he has become more talented. Maybe he like took a haiku class in between because they were all real bad.
A little workshop. That'd be fun. Good for him.
Yeah.
Professional development.
Well, we are seeing, sorry, this is an interruption and a sidebar. We are seeing Rick, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
It's the 26th of September.
Yeah, and this comes out the 11th, so right before. Oh, that's exciting. We can have people send us questions, even though we are not going to talk to him. I don't know
how I know. We would. I don't know think either. We're going
to speak personally also, to him. Also,
having to like explain to him that we have a podcast about his books makes me kind of want to vomit. Same. I don't know why.
Same. It just like it's too much of fan behavior, you know?
And we're clearly not fan. I know. It's so embarrassing.
It's embarrassing. I want to be like, yeah, I just have this really cool indie podcast. It's just like happens to be about like Greek mythology.
That's all we're gonna talk
about. Like maybe like also mostly about your books, but you know.
I have a friend who started reading Percy Jackson.
Oh.
Like, she's like, oh, you know, not because of me at all. I don't think she knows about my relationship to it. She's like, oh, my sister, like my little sister really likes it. I'm going to pick it up. And she's not a big reader anyway. So she was like, I'm going to start reading it. And I was just like, she was like, don't make fun of me for reading this because we went at the beach together and she pulled it out. She's like, don't make fun of me for reading this. And I had to be very, very, because I don't tell a lot of people on my own. It's like other people tell me, like my friends tell for me that I'm on a podcast, which is awful. But I was like, oh, okay. I was like, no, I loved those books growing up. Like, I would never make fun of you. And I was like, I like that a normal human amount.
Like, I those books the exact average amount of a human.
Yes. And, like, I have a relationship to those books the way an adult should have a relationship to children's books.
Yes.
So, and she did not, obviously she has no context, so she did not understand the sarcasm and I didn't explain, so, and she'll never know, so we'll keep it that way.
She'll find out one day and it'll all make sense, you know?
Yeah.
She'll finally get your joke, months later, years even.
Decades, perhaps.
Decades later. Yeah, when she finds out that we became best friends with Rick after we see him in Seattle.
Yes.
And he just like talks about us all. He actually names characters after us next.
And then they die.
He kills them immediately. We actually have a pattern of all the Percy Jackson podcasters' names being in the book suddenly and then them all dying.
He's actually really mad about it. Yeah, that we're making like, podcasts. Stop
talking about me. Alrighty. So back to chapter 25, which I didn't start.
Yeah. Got a little bit distracted.
We did. Continue. We start with them reaching Sutro Tower, and they find it unguarded. The door is wide open. There's an empty parking lot. Apollo does see, like, some birds in the sky, but he's like, those are obviously just normal birds. This is ominous. Tarquin had mentioned that they were doubling security, yet nobody is there, or so they think. Reyna and her dogs prowl around and determine that the place is indeed empty, so they begin their climb up the tower, which just reminds me of, like, I always really wanted to climb a water tower as a kid.
Yeah, especially because I grew up watching That 70s Show with like my older cousins, and they always hang out at the water tower. And I was like, what a cool place for teens to hang out. And now as an adult, I know that's what teens do because they have no other place to go.
Yeah.
So, you know, like setting fires to feel joy, that kind of thing.
Yeah. There was a water tower like biking distance from my house growing up, and it used to be like the meeting place with neighbors. It would be like, let's meet at the water tower. And then I remember just like staring at it being like, how do I climb it? Can I do it? So Apollo's living my dream right now.
Yeah.
Except not really. Because as they get higher, Apollo notices more dark shapes swirling above him, but he rationalizes. He's like, those are clearly normal birds because strixes only fly at night, and apparently those are the only non-normal bird he can think of. He's like, that's the only one that exists. Every other bird is normal. Meg notices as they climb that everything smells like roses. Apollo and Reyna don't smell anything, but she senses something above them, way up, even higher. So they climb some more towards the smell. They make it about halfway to the second set of crossbeams when one of the dark shadows dives out of the fog and nearly knocks Apollo off. Apollo was sort of right about them being normal birds because, like, they're ravens, but they're giant versions of ravens.
My dream. So here's a little bit
there. Is it?
I always wanted, like, growing up, I either wanted a wolf or, like, a raven of some sort. Like a big bird. I was interesting. Really into, yeah. I don't know why.
I didn't have the bird desire as a child.
I mean, I didn't like pigeons and stuff, obviously, but I liked ravens.
Obviously.
I thought they were, obviously, like, what, a common pigeon as my pet? Please.
Please.
I need something that's, like, magical and mystical feeling, like ravens.
Mm. Okay.
I also wanted purple eyes, so you can kind of tell imagination was.
Yeah,
my goals and desires.
I wanted that. Raven, a sword. Gregor the Overlander. All the people in the Underland had purple eyes, and I was like, I would like my eyes to turn purple and like staring in the mirror, like if I squint, willing it, are they purplish?
Manifesting this to happen.
Yeah, manifesting before I even knew what that was. You know, so witchy. It didn't work. Well, apparently all of those guards that Tarquin mentioned are giant ravens, and Apollo tells them, the others, that they must be here because of Coronis. The others and us don't know what he's talking about, and he says that it's a long story. In fact, Apollo himself was involved in shaping ravens to be what they are. So chapter 26. I'd like to sing a classic for you now. Thank you. Please stop stabbing me. I read this haiku and I was like, God damn it, he's gonna sing again. It's like, no.
I know. I was like, there's no way he's gonna actually sing. I just assume he's always gonna sing. Anytime there's a battle sequence, instead of like creative, clever fighting tricks, he's just gonna burst into song.
He's gonna sing at them and it's gonna work out because that's the one thing he has for himself, his voice. They can't take it away, you know? So the ravens continue to attack them as they climb, and Apollo explains a bit to the others about why ravens hate him specifically. He sort of created them, or rather he changed them from what they were into what they are. So apparently back in the old days, ravens used to be gentle and white like doves, but they liked to gossip. just like what? They were chatty. They were into gossip. And one time Apollo was dating a girl named Coronis. I say dating in quotes because we all know what that means. And the ravens found out that she was cheating on Apollo and told him about it. He got so angry that he ordered Artemis to kill Coronis for him and then punished the ravens for being tattletales, even though he's just shooting the messenger, you know? And he turned them into what they are today. So he made them kind of like angry and insane and black. And Reyna has such a good, both Reyna and Meg have such good comments here, where Meg's like, hold on, you ordered a girl who cheated on you to be killed? Like, that does not, that's an overreaction. And Reyna's like, why is black worse than white, Apollo? And it's just like really funny. Oh, and also, Coronis was pregnant with Apollo's child when he ordered her to be murdered. But he's like, don't worry, I saved the child. Who turned out to be Asclepius, who was that dude who gave that weird potion to Leo and Heirs of Olympus.
That god of health, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So really, he's like, I'm not all bad. I saved my son.
The fact that Artemis, like, agreed to do this, too. Yeah. Like, it's unfortunate. Like, I would be upset if, like, the person that my brother liked or was dating. Dating is a strong word. Cheated on him, but I just be like, bro, like, you gotta deal with it. Like, maybe cool off, move on. Like, it's okay. Mm-hmm. Co-parent.
Maybe just like block her on Instagram, you know? Like, I know. You know, it's just
like she's the mother of your child.
Yeah. Yeah, Artemis, it's not a good look for her either. Like you said, she's upholding the patriarchy right now, or the systems of oppression. Mm-hmm. Yikes. Well,
yikes.
Following that revelation, Meg and Reyna are rightfully really pissed at Apollo. They both keep, like, kicking him as they're also kicking the ravens away. They're like, you sucked so much as a god. Like, you murdered your pregnant girlfriend. What is wrong with you? And the ravens are also viciously attacking them. So things are not, it's not pleasant for Apollo, but he kind of deserves that.
Mm-hmm.
They make it to the next catwalk and are like in sight of the next catwalk, and Apollo spies a shipping container that might offer them shelter from the ravens. Reyna says that they'll need to find something to drive them all away, and she's like, something that they hate even more than they hate you, Apollo, so they'll leave. And then, because I thought this was like the funniest line she could have said, she was like, Apollo, why don't you sing? And I was like, same. I'm also like the ravens, where if Apollo were to start singing, I too would flee.
Just leave, yeah. It's like, not worth it.
I'd be like, I can't right now. I can't watch a musical performance. I'm sorry. He racks his brain for an annoying song, and then he remembers how Percy played Chiron's music for the Evil Pigeons back in PJO, and so he sings Dean Martin, a cover of Volare, which I don't know that song. I feel like I'm going to have to listen to it.
I don't really know Dean Martin either. That's not personally my type of music.
And I feel like the joke kind of goes over my head. And I'm not, like, a kid reader, but, like, I don't know. I guess I'm younger. I don't know Dean Martin.
Yeah, but, like, so Trials of Apollo. But Trials of Apollo came out when we were, in college?
I think so. The fifth book came out, like, recently, like, 2 years ago.
Dean Martin is an old artist. Like, he's, like... Isn't he from, like, the 70s?
I genuinely don't really know who he is. I just know that.
He was born in 1917.
Like, this joke, I feel like it's not landing, Rick. Like, as a kid, I didn't know who that is.
No, and as an adult, I don't know. I feel like it's a joke for the parents reading to the kids. As long as the parents are also Ricks.
The pizza pie song? I don't know. Pizza pie song. It just says, that's Amore. The one that everyone, like, on the internet turns into something else.
He's in a lot of movies.
Lots of Italian songs. Is he Italian?
Yeah.
I think so.
Dean Martin. He's born in Ohio.
Yeah.
You know, home of the Italians.
He died like quite a while ago. Oh, he died on Christmas Day, 1995. That's really sad.
I love looking at old, like, famous, like, especially the ones who became famous in like the 50s, and just like looking at their spouse, like how many spouses that they had and how many children they had, especially men.
He had a lot of spouses. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Three.
He got divorced every like 5 to 8 years.
Oh, wow, and he got married the same year he got divorced. For all of his divorces, he got remarried.
Scandalous.
Oh my god, you know, he had 8 children. Yes. Wow.
We're quickly losing the plot.
Yeah, well, now everyone knows. Well, we're just actually doing Rick's job for him. Because the youth don't know who Dean Martin is. So we are now making it so this joke is funnier.
So his last wife, he married less than a month after his second marriage dissolved, and she was 26 and he was 55.
Oh, no. No, it's another Leonardo DiCaprio.
Leonardo DiCaprio never marries.
That's
girls,
true.
Though.
At least, yeah, he doesn't marry him, doesn't lock him down.
Well, his second wife, they were married for 24 years.
That's really?
That's a long time.
That's a long time. What happened? I mean, clearly, it looks like he had an affair.
Yes.
With Catherine Hahn. Mm.
Is he the dad? Ricky Martin?
I don't know. Ricci Martin. Ricci, probably. Ricci. The Italian. He's in a band called The Pack. Oh, and he collabed with the Beach Boys. We're really losing the plot. I'm so sorry. Anyone who's like more well-versed in music or older than us is probably like, they're so dumb right now.
You don't know. Yeah, I feel like it's like either you are yourself somehow a Dean Martin fan or your parents really liked Dean Martin.
Yeah, and I don't think my parents did. Who knows? Maybe I'll get a text from my dad who listens to this being like, I love Dean Martin. Okay.
My favorite thing about having immigrant parents is there's a lot of American culture that they just did not get. Mm-hmm, and so it'll be like later in life that will, like, for example, even like when we watched Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, like it's about the Manson murders. My parents have no idea what the Manson murders are. They're like, what is this random plot line?
You're like, it was real.
I was like, it was real. And like all of that story, they're like, oh, is this real? I didn't know that. So unless they were around in the country, which, you know, was the 80s onward, they don't know anything about these people.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so he sings Dean Martin.
Yeah, he sang some Dean Martin songs, which we'll all have to look up. The Ravens are disgusted. They leave. Meg and Raina are also traumatized by this song. They're like, please stop. Like, Rick really hates this man. But now they have some time to climb and reach shelter before the birds return to them. So chapter 27. Let's play Guess the God. Starts with H, wants to kill me, besides my stepmom. I thought that one was funny. Nice call out to Hera.
Is, just like, family structure-wise, if you... Hypothetically, you, right? Mm-hmm. If you have an affair, you're married to Mike, famously. Okay. You have an affair, you have a child. Is Mike that child's stepdad?
I mean, if I'm still married to him, I guess. So
you were married to him before, and for some reason you're still married to him after.
Yeah. I guess so.
Because that's essentially like, Apollo.
Mike adopted the child. Because I don't think Hera, like, took on the role of mother for Apollo or Artemis or any of Zeus's other children.
Or even her own children.
Yeah, I don't think she took on that role for anyone, really.
No. But so, do you become a step... Because isn't a stepmom, like, your parent remarries usually, after your mom or marries someone who is not your mom later?
I don't know. Does this situation happen often? I feel like usually if this happens and, you know, it's in, I'm basing this off of like when it's in books, usually like the person doesn't tell their partner they're married to that it's not their kid. And then like the kid gets older and everyone's like, it looks like our friend Bob. And well, then they're like, oh my God, it's Bob's kid the whole time. But like the dad is like, well, I've been raising it as my own.
Well, if this situation is switched and so, you know, Mike gets someone pregnant, it's pretty obvious it's not your kid.
It's obvious. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. Because Zeus is, I don't know. Apparently, according to Apollo, she does take on the role of stepmom. So, there we have it.
There you go.
So they all reach the catwalk with the shipping container, and the smell of roses is so strong now that even Apollo and Raina can smell it, because Meg has, like, special flower powers and can smell everything from afar. They decide to try and get into the container since it looks so out of place it must be important. As they walk across the catwalk with Meg in the front, Meg suddenly says, like, hey, do you guys feel weird? And as she gets closer to the shipping container, she tries to speak, but only half of her words come out. Like, they can only hear half of what she's saying. It kind of sounds like she's, like, on the other line of, like, a phone breaking up. When she steps back towards them, away from the shipping container, her words are back to normal. So Apollo tries it out. He steps toward the container, and suddenly sound disappears as he gets closer. The wind goes away, the other's voices, the sound of his own feet against, like, the metal of the catwalk. The shipping container has imperial gold chains on it, keeping it locked, and on the left-hand door, Alexandria is written in Arabic, as in Alexandria, Egypt. He knows that they must be dealing with a Ptolemaic god, a minor Egyptian-Greek hybrid god from the days when the Greeks ruled Egypt. Roses were this god's symbol, but he can't, for the life of him, remember the god's name. So he consults the Arrow of Dodona for an answer, and immediately the Arrow is like, oh my gosh, congratulations on finding thy groove. And Apollo's like, this is not what... And he's like, well, you know, you're at least beginning to find your groove. So apparently Apollo's grooving, according to the Arrow. The Arrow tells Apollo that the god's name begins with an H. He can't just tell Apollo the name. He has to make it a little difficult. That'd be too
easy. Yeah.
Exactly. Apollo eventually works out that it's Harpocrates, yet another figure who specifically hates Apollo and wishes to vaporize him. Of my notes, I think I touched on most of them. My one, I was like, I didn't look her up. I want to, but for the sake of remaining spoiler free, I want to look up Coronis now, like the woman who allegedly cheated on Apollo and like was the mother of Asclepius. I feel like I'd read one of those like retelling Greek mythology, feminist retelling books about her. Because again, as we've talked about, the women are always the ones that get like murdered in all these Greek myths. I mean, like, I guess she actually did cheat on him in this, but like that doesn't warrant murder.
Yeah, and also, I don't know if I'd want to read that because I know that she gets murdered. Yeah, like, I'm like, okay, another story where God just does whatever the fuck he wants and it's a male god.
Yeah.
Fine.
I just want to know, like, who it was that she cheated. Was she in love? Was she, like,
Was it, like, actual cheating? Was she, like, you know what? Whatever. I'm going to look it up. Coronis?
Okay. Yeah. Ooh, she was a princess.
Of course she was a princess.
She cheated with a man. I can't pronounce that. Ishkish.
Ishkish?
Ishkis. Ishkis.
Oh, wow. She killed... when Artemis kills her, she ends up killing a lot of people in order to get to her.
Nice.
And Apollo feels bad afterwards, but he's, like, specifically upset with the birds. For she in the madness of her heart had spurned the god, and unknown to her father took another lover, even though her maiden bed she had already shared with Apollo of the flowing hair, and bore within her the godly holy seed.
Kind of just seems like she just cheated on him, which is rough and unfortunate, but you know, again, you don't murder your baby mama. You don't murder in general. You
maybe
talk like you
it
can,
out. Maybe you separate, you know, like you figure it out.
Yeah, move on. You find out the best method for co-parenting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Interesting.
Interesting. Anyway, there's not much about her other than that.
Yeah. I wonder, like, all how right. her and Apollo... It says one day Apollo saw her and became enamored of her. So honestly, like, maybe she never even cared for him. It was...
Very likely. Captive relationship. Yeah.
Yeah. And then she fell in love with someone in real, like, IRL. But the problem with, like, having the gods is that they know what you're doing at all times.
Yes.
Or apparently and the crows. Or not the crows.
The dove ravens.
Yeah. The dove ravens.
That's true. God, can't even, like, have an affair in peace. The birds tell on you.
Birds tell on you. Like Twitter back then. Ancient Twitter is just
ancient Twitter.
The craven. Cravens? What if
the craven?
The ravens.
All right. I've got chapters 28 through 30. Chapter 28. We all need a hand on our shoulder sometimes so we can chew through steel. So Apollo admits
to
the girls.
I like the way you spelled through there in our outline.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize.
That's cute.
Wait, I'm curious if that's if I copied it or if I just am like that dumb. Just my Kindle version, which is a legal version.
The legal Kindle version.
I would never, ever. Nope, I'm just dumb. Okay.
Love it.
All right, so Apollo admits to the girls that he was a bully to poor Harpocrates, making fun of him in front of the other Olympians, locking him in his stables overnight with his, like, fire horses, amongst other horrible things. Like, even, like, writing, like, zap me on his back and getting him electrocuted. Stuff like that. You know, the usual.
So dumb.
So now Apollo is a Lester, so he has empathy. Like, being mortal has created empathy within him, and he's horrified that he acted that way in the past. He's like, just because someone was weaker and smaller than him, he targeted them. And Apollo himself as a god only really had one bully, and it was Zeus, his father, mm-hmm. which is like that you can unpack it itself to explain mm-hmm. why he is the way he is. But he feels like he should have known better. He knew what pain it was to have your own father bully you. Why would he want to share that with somebody else? So basically now it's clear that Tarquin has orchestrated all of this with Apollo in mind. Basically, by bringing up the ghosts of his past mistakes, he's exposing how cruel Apollo was to his friends, who he hoped would see him in a different light. Apollo decides the only thing to do is go up to Harpocrates and apologize and just kind of see how it goes from there. He is the one who's in the wrong. He can't skirt around it. He tells the girls that Harpocrates usually takes the form of a 10-year-old with a shaved head except for a ponytail, which is the fashion of Egyptian children at the time. This is very funny because at this point, Meg is like, you bullied a 10-year-old? Like, are you crazy?
Yeah. And then Apollo's like so disturbed with him.
It's like the more information that comes out of Apollo's mouth, the more horrified they are by him, which is also telling of how Lester is as a person, that they can't imagine Lester ever doing these things. Mm-hmm. But I think it's easier for them to imagine Apollo, who is a god and is famously a horrible person.
Yeah.
And as all gods are. Like,
yeah. And the fact that they're like still with him and like they didn't just leave is like they still must believe that he is a good person.
Yeah. That he's like a getting separate better. Person. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Harpocrates was originally the god of children. But when Alexander the Great invaded and took over, basically, the Greeks saw, which is this symbol of someone shushing, a child shushing, which is actually the hieroglyph of children. So he's supposed to be the god of children. But they instead decided he was the god of silence, and thus this hybrid god was born. Basically, by adopting the religion, and Apollo explains the power of 1,000 people having the same thought can create new religions and new gods. It's very powerful. Mm. Harpocrates is chained in the box, and his powers are probably being magnified by the cables in the tower, so that's what's been cutting off all the communication. They decide to go inside, but are weary about the prophecy saying they have to kill the god. They're hoping it's like some kind of weird interpretation instead of the actual literal killing of him, because killing a god, let alone a 10-year-old god who's done nothing wrong besides being bullied by Apollo, is pretty hard to stomach. Reyna explains that since Apollo has like a medium set of his original skills back, like sometimes he has the surge of his godly powers, and now he has like the low level baseline of his godly powers back. Maybe he can use his godly strength to break the chains and get into the box if she gives him her energy like she did back in Heroes of Olympus. We saw her do that for Nico and the other people in the Legion. Mm-hmm. So when Apollo gets Reyna, who is taking energy from Meg, to hold on to him, he feels like his godly self. He breaks the chains like paper. He's having a great time because he forgot how it feels to be powerful and really good at what he does. And he looks back and he actually sees how much pain Reyna and Meg are in by giving mm-hmm. him their powers. And so he no longer is having a good time. There's a cost to his powers and he feels really bad about it. He moves quicker and rips the doors open, and the three of them go inside the cable box. All right, chapter 29. Ever heard the phrase, "the silence is deafening"? Yeah, that's a real thing. So all three of them crumple on the ground from the... This reminded me, the way that they describe this cable box is... Have you ever been in like a parking garage that's so underground, it just like the sound sounds weird when you speak?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially when it's like empty.
Yes. Yeah. And it just feels like there's something's wrong. Like you're like the pressure is really intense too, because it's so silent.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what I imagine in this situation.
I can see that. Yeah.
So all three of them crumple on the ground with the intensity that is the silence that's emitting from the god. Harpocrates communicates through mental images to Apollo, and he's immediately assaulted with imageries of just like, "I hate you."
Mm-hmm.
Hippocrates is still like 10 years old looking. He's floating in the center of the room with his fingers to his lips. We find out that he always has to, that's like his default position. It takes a lot of his energy to remove his finger from his mouth. So he just is always looking like a librarian. But Hippocrates doesn't look great. His skin is saggy and wrinkled. He looks pale and sad. He's in imperial gold chains and he's hooked up to the tower with a bunch of cables to like amplify his powers. Apollo notices entangled in the chains and wires are two golden axes that are each about 4 feet tall. They're fasces, the ultimate symbol of Roman might. In the olden days, we get a little history lesson, which I thought was really interesting because personally, I didn't know this.
Yeah, I didn't either.
In the olden days, officials were flanked by bodyguards, each carrying one of these axes to let commoners know that there's someone important. The more fasces there are, the more important the person must be. And then in the 20th century, Mussolini revived the symbol when he became the dictator of Italy, and thus the ruling philosophy of fascism. Why is that hard to say? Fascism. It's like the philosophy and then saying fascism is like, ugh.
Yeah.
The ruling philosophy of fascism. Oh my God. Okay. That ruling philosophy was created. So these fasces are personal ones of the emperors. They have like their names engraved on it. And they're the things that are holding Hippocrates captive. I love this idea of like, how do you symbolize your wealth and your importance? It's like the idea of, but it doesn't, you don't realize how stupid it is until you like make analogy of like, imagine you wear, the amount of hats you wear symbolize how powerful you are.
I like
there's
that.
There's just a man walking around with 17 hats on his head. Mm-hmm. What is it for besides just like telling other people that you can make yourself, you can afford these hats. You want to display them all at once.
Yes. I like that. Oh. They're like axes.
Yeah, they're axes. Like, and it all, I don't know if you've ever seen Veep, but in that show, the one of the running gags is that the Veeps or the vice president's motorcade just continuously gets longer for no reason. And there's like 15 cars and there's like 30. And then it's just like a line of like 7,000 cars because it's no reason. There's like a certain level of security that you need to have. But after a while, it's just like a show of power.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I thought that was a really cool little history lesson. So Apollo uses mental pictures to talk to Hippocrates, who is meanwhile assaulting him with pictures of his previous bullying. It's like interspersed with like Apollo dunking Hippocrates' head in the toilet. Oh. He finds out that Hippocrates was overpowered and captured by the emperors and has been stuck in this box for years, being used to silence demigods whenever the triumvirate needed it. And he's been growing weaker and weaker. Hippocrates was the emperor's prisoner, not an ally. But he also is like not following the rule of the enemy of my enemy is my friend, because he also does not like Apollo. Mm-hmm. Meg tries to communicate shared pain and hatred of the emperors by giving Hippocrates her backstory, but he dismisses it. He's annoyed that Meg thinks that their pain is comparable and is just like annoyed with her in general. So Rhaena tries a different approach. She tries to express that, like, look at the misery that will happen at Camp Jupiter and all the people that will die if the emperors attack. But Hippocrates is still unmoved.
He's like, Apollo, I don't care.
He's like, I am in the box. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's annoyed. He's in the box. He's like, I'm stuck. What do you want from me? Apollo instead sends him images of all of Apollo's failure. So basically it's just like a long show of all the people he's lost and people he thinks that he have died because of him and all the horror he has had to face as a mortal. Hippocrates is surprised by Apollo's show of regret and shame because that's not Apollo's MO usually. And so it gives Apollo the chance to ask to destroy the fasces, since it'll also hurt the emperors, since it's their personal little axes that they've engraved.
They painted it themselves.
They took it to paint away. They baked it themselves.
Yeah. Aww, that's very cute. They like had a little date, you know?
Boys' night. Magically boys' night. Oh my god, let's carve axes together.
Classic. Classic. In my Mojo Dojo Casa house.
Yes. Hippocrates likes this idea, but does not promise to not hurt them once he's free. He's like, free me. Just like, we'll see what happens. Like, you got to take a gamble. Apollo has to take the chance, basically. He has no other option. And he asks Hippocrates only to harm him and not his friends. Hippocrates doesn't agree to this. He just kind of is like, they'll see what happens. And signals to his lap where Apollo can see a glass jar. It's Sybil. Her body has decayed because Apollo won't let her die. And because he's like, I want to sleep with you when you rejected me. So
when you're a husk of nothingness, I yes. still want to sleep with you.
So all that's left of her is her life force and her voice, which is in this glass jar. She also has all the right to want Apollo dead. So Apollo has to make a choice. Basically, the two people he's like might have wronged the most are sitting in front of them, and he has to give them the mm-hmm. power to essentially kill him. Mm-hmm. He asks Rhaena and Meg to destroy the feces. Feces, wow. I want to say feces so bad.
I hope okay. it's not the feces. Be a different yeah. kind of story going on here.
Commodus has left his personalized feces.
Because of his name, the commode.
Because of his name, the commode.
It all comes together.
We love a theme. He asks Rhaena and Meg to destroy the feces and cut Hippocrates free. All right, chapter 30. A voice and a shh. I have seen stranger couples. Wait, no, I haven't. Rhaena and Meg destroy the feces, making them explode. Hippocrates rises and sends a new image into Apollo's mind. He basically is like, it's story time now. He tells the story of how he is locked in chains by a ghoul. Because Tarquin knows that Hippocrates' powers are with silence, and who is unaffected by silence but something that's already dead. Tarquin has given, for no reason that we can quite understand, Tarquin has given Hippocrates the jar with Sybil on, like in it. Sybil's voice is able to cut through Hippocrates' silence, and for the first time in a long time, Hippocrates can hear sound, and he has a friend. Sybil tells him that she refused to tell the emperors the future. She's like, I'm beyond suffering. I'm literally a voice. What could they possibly yeah. do to me? I won't give in to these evil dictators. Hippocrates is the same. He's wasting away from the last century as humans have slowly forgotten him. His life has been full of disappointments and bullying, and it's been hard, and he just really wants eternal rest. So they bond over both wanting to essentially die. Their friendship becomes stronger and they develop feelings. This is where Apollo decides to interrupt and be like, wait, are you guys together?
It's like, are you guys a thing? Oh my god,
what is your celebrity couple name? Sippocrates?
Sippocrates.
So Hippocrates is really offended by this ask, because first of all, who is Apollo to ask this of either of them? Also, why is he interrupting story time? So he basically starts sending Apollo so much pain and hatred that Apollo falls over. Apollo understands that Hippocrates means to kill him, and he's ready for it, but Rhaena and Meg interrupt by sending Hippocrates images of Apollo being good, singing The Fall of Jason Grace, which is a trademark song yes. now.
Yeah, the death offering, song.
The death song. Offering to be Reyna's boyfriend, which made Rhaena laugh for the first time in a long time. Apollo's a little bruised by it still. He's like, thanks, I guess. Being kind to Meg, saving camp, being with his children and really caring for them and missing them when they're gone and worrying for them, etc. The girls ask Hippocrates if this Apollo is the same person he once was, and Hippocrates is a little confused because he remembers a god that was cruel, and Lester is full of growth and kindness and empathy. Sybil interrupts them, and because of the silence around her, her quiet voice is able to be heard. Sybil reminds them of the prophecy line, added the last breath of the god who speaks not, once his soul is cut free together with shattered glass. Sybil had written that line when Rome was just kind of forming as an empire. Paula was like, she's been around for such a long time, and she's had to endure and watch so much. While she was writing that line, did she know she was predicting her own death? Probably not, just that something was going to happen. And Apollo kind of reflects that Sybil has every right to want him dead. She's been sitting here as a jar for so long, being used and abused by people in power just because Apollo really wanted to bone her.
Yep. Ugh.
So Harpocrates and I know, not a good look, Apollo. Harpocrates and Sybil have a private conversation while Reyna and Meg use their bodies to shield Apollo, who is on the floor from the god. Harpocrates kisses the jar, opens the lid, and releases Sybil. In her last breath, Sybil forgives Apollo, not because he deserves it, but because she wants to leave the world and go into oblivion, basically carrying love and not hatred in her heart. Harpocrates, on the other hand, is like, I also want to do that, but I'm having a really hard time forgiving Apollo.
It's fair.
Apollo is stunned at Harpocrates' willingness and want to die. He asks him why, and in his confusion, Harpocrates finds comfort. He understands something that Apollo does not and will not, and so therefore, Harpocrates is going to die the wiser god.
He's so, like, huh, I'm smarter than you.
Yeah, I'm ready to die. He sends Apollo a last image, the image of Apollo at an altar making a sacrifice to the heavens. Then he dies. His last breath goes into the open jar, which Reyna manages to catch right before it falls and shatters on the floor. The three digest what just happened, but when Reyna looks over at Apollo, she's horrified to see the poison has spread to his neck, like up his neck and into his face, into his cheeks. He definitely does not have much time left. Meg and Reyna help him to his feet, and they're trying to discuss how to get him back down because he's not in great shape. But before they can figure out what to do, Meg hears a noise. The cries of angry birds. The ravens have returned.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. I didn't really have any notes. I've stopped writing them down because I feel like I tend to just talk about my feelings as we go. I feel like the god that is going to help Apollo is going to be like Hephaestus or something. It's going to be someone I really want it to be Artemis. I think that makes the most sense to bring Talia. But I'm also getting the vibe because of who Apollo was that Apollo is going to become a super powerful like demigod hybrid and then choose not to return to be Apollo. Which is a kind of a big bummer for me because I think that therefore, if that happens in this universe, there can be no more children of Apollo. Mm-hmm. And therefore, Camp Half-Blood will literally have no doctors.
They have no one else.
Yeah, Will is going to age out and move on and everyone's going to die in masses from, like, simple infections. They're going to be like, we don't have any antibiotics. I'm so sorry. They're
like, sorry, we don't even have aspirin. Like,
no.
They'll have to, like, phone Will at his adult job away from camping. Like, can you please order us our prescriptions?
And it takes, like, 3 to 5 business days to get there while they're getting slaughtered by monsters. Yeah.
They have to go refill it at, like, a CVS or something.
Yeah, nearby. God. Yeah. Anyway, so that's why I don't think that should be the case. I know it feels kind of what Rick is like hinting at, that Apollo is going to find that there is a lot more joy and experience in being mortal and having empathy. But also I feel like Apollo choosing not to become a god would be disrespectful to Jason, asking him like, hey, once you get into power, make sure you don't forget what it feels like to be human so you can help us. And if he's like, I'm just going to choose not to be a god anymore, is just big bummers.
Yeah.
All around. So those are my opinions and predictions. We'll see what happens. We only have, I think, like 2 more episodes left. Like we have one more episode.
Wow.
And then like there's an extra chapter because I think there's 7 chapters left. So
there's 43 total chapters.
So yeah. So it's like 2 more episodes and change. Yeah,
we'll probably two episodes like and some include change. The last. Yeah, we'll probably do like 8 chapters in the last or something like that. Wow. Wow, wow.
Lots of fun.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Mm-hmm. Ready for some lightning bolt questions?
Yes, indeed.
all right. Have you ever had to defend someone who did something uncool?
I mean, probably, but I feel like it's just been like if friends of mine do things that I think are questionable, I'm still gonna like back them up and support them, but I might like behind their back be like, that was a weird choice, you know? But I feel like not totally ever agree. To the point of someone doing like something really bad. There's not like a consequential time. Yeah, there's not like a super consequential time I can think of where I like defended someone and then later was like, oh, I shouldn't have defended them or like, oh, that sucked. Like, I can't think of any time where it was like super, where whatever they did was that deep, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I feel like the same way. And even in the situations where like my friends have done things that are uncool, I don't think I've like defended their actions. Mm-hmm. It's more of been like, I still see potential for them to like grow and hopefully apologize. And if they don't do that, they're no longer my friend. But at that time, I'm like, I still see a potential for them. They've made a mistake. I don't excuse their mistake, but I hope that they grow. And sometimes they don't. And sometimes I'm like, oh, shit. You never grew.
Mm-hmm. That's unfortunate. Yeah.
That is unfortunate. I always find it interesting because so they're going to be getting into fucking cancel culture vibes.
Oh, no.
I was talking to some of the younger girls who are like in their teens and stuff. And they were basically telling me, I have no idea about this person. And so they were talking about a TikTok person that they like who's gone viral. And she's like, I would say in her 20s now, like she's in college or out of college, and some like tweets of hers when she was in middle school and high school resurfaced. Mm. They were just explaining this to me, resurfaced where she was like homophobic or like a little bit racist, you know, problematic tweets.
Yes.
When she was like 14 or 15. And I was just like, it's interesting because we had a conversation where I was like, I hope that we can see that maybe she owns up to her mistakes, because I would never want to see the things that I tweeted or put on social media when I was like in eighth. Like, to be fair, they were not ever detrimentally bad, but they are probably things that I did not know enough. Like, now that I know more information, I would not have said or being weird about it. Yeah, like kind of like cringy. Yeah. And so I hope that like, you know, like, oh, we hope that in the span of becoming an adult, she has grown and learned. But it was also interesting because the girls are like, well, she wrote those tweets the same age we are now, and we would never do that. Mm-hmm. So why does she get an excuse? Because it was like a couple, like at least 10 years ago, but we would never do that now.
That's a good point. Like, yeah. But it's also like, I feel like it's an evolving conversation with the like, the access to knowledge that people have, you know, like, I don't know how old this person is, but like, if it was like 10 years ago, I don't know. I mean, the way the internet was and social media was 10 years ago was really different than it is now. So it's interesting. I feel like it's an evolving thing where it's like, kids now have access to a lot of information. But like, does that mean we should hold them to higher standards? Because like, that still feels weird because I'm like, that is a 13-year-old, like they're not going to be a fully developed human, but also they have access to information that can tell them like, hey, maybe you shouldn't say those words or that thing.
Yeah. And I do get the girls are also coming from like they're brown girls. And this, I think this creator is a white woman. And so they were like, we've always known because we had to know.
Yeah.
And she just gets to play innocent because she doesn't know better because she doesn't have the life experience of knowing better is what she says. And so that's really frustrating too, because we know better because we've lived through like experiencing harder, like, you know, more racial aggression, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought that was a really interesting conversation, especially because like, and then also on the internet, there's also the conversation of like, white men will like be like, I am sorry. And everyone forgives them immediately.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, oh, what? I don't know. It was like the idea of, like, I see some stan culture where you just, like, you defend them forever.
Yeah.
Because you think they're hot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought that was an interesting conversation.
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, even like celebrities who do shitty things, I feel like I've not like aggressively defended them. I've been like, well, I don't know them personally, you know?
Yeah. Also, like, I don't think I'll ever like someone's personal life.
Like they are
enough to be like, wow, how could they personally do this to me?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
But I know there's a lot of people who find comfort in their like idols and stuff like that. So I can see how it can become very hurtful when they don't live up to the potential that you hope they could. Yeah. This conversation is getting away from me fast.
Those parasocial relationships.
Yes.
Anyways, question. What song would you sing to drive birds away?
Thank you so much. Honestly, any song that I sing would probably drive the birds away. I'm not very vocally talented.
Me neither. I think maybe like the Caillou theme song. That's a really annoying one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I feel like some kind of nursery rhyme.
That's like designed to entrance children, like infants, because of the repetitiveness.
Yeah.
You know, or the song that's like, I know a song, I
get
on
everybody's nerves. Oh my God. Everybody's that gives me nerves. Flashbacks to being in like fourth grade.
Yeah. So like I saw all like 99 bottles of beer because I don't really have to think. If I'm climbing and I'm doing multiple activities, I don't want to have to think too hard about the song lyrics. Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah. Caillou is a good one.
Yeah. Thank you. And then this other one I thought of, what flower would you make your like symbol as a god? Because this god is like roses is his thing.
Oh, 100% jasmine.
Ooh.
I love the smell. Every single perfume, everything I own has like is jasmine scented. I have like, you know, culturally I put jasmine in my hair. Love jasmine. I love the smell of jasmine. I know it's kind of dividing, but I.
Is it really?
I think a lot of people don't like it.
Oh, I like
it. It's very strong.
Yeah. Yeah. I love like jasmine tea too. Mm. But yeah, it is a specific scent.
Yes.
Yeah.
What about you?
I was thinking like a sunflower because it's like the flower that blooms around my birthday.
That's cute. Well, but does sunflower have a scent?
No. But I don't care. Dirt. Dirt. Smells like dirt. Yeah. I just think like the symbol would be cute to have all over. Mm-hmm. And I always liked sunflowers.
All right. So we're going to be back next week to our second to last chapters 31 through 36 of The Tyrant's Tomb.
And if you're interested in supporting us, you can find us on Patreon. The link's in the episode description. There's also a link to send us an audio message if you'd like to.
Our social media is at Camp Half Pod. Our email is camphalfpod@gmail.com. You can message us on either of those, Instagram, DM us, or email us if you want to join our Discord.
And don't forget to rate and review wherever you listen.
Bye-bye.